I was the only one that could write Python and had some data science background or somewhat of experience in stats and programming. So that was enough evidence for Celcus to say, go build me a data science team. And I was like, bro, I have no fucking clue how to do this, but hell yeah, I'll try. My guiding principle was like, these guys might not be like the most incredible data scientist ever, but they were DJs.
Welcome to the ATX DAO Podcast, the hub for exploring the forefront of blockchain technology and Austin's Web3 community. Your hosts, Nick, Mason, Luke, and Ash, connect you with innovators within ATX DAO and beyond as we venture into the world of decentralized technology. So crack open a beer and join us for a front row seat to learn about the innovations and trends shaping our digital future. This is the ATX DAO Podcast.
So I was in Kansas City yesterday. I gave a quick talk for this Web3 conference.
Okay.
And we got a shout out.
So, ATX DAO?
Yeah.
Mm. Let's go.
We were even a slide in somebody's deck.
What?
So Kansas City is trying to start a Kansas City DAO.
Of course.
Yeah.
I was just on a call with someone today who was like, oh, I know KC DAO. They tried to hire me to get advice on how to do ATX DAO. They were like a brand agent. And they're like, hey, we see ATX DAO. We want help doing this.
Yeah. Well, so I guess John Silas talked to him.
I have no idea who the people are.
Like a year ago?
Yeah.
And I guess sat down and talked about, you know, what we've done so far with the DAO and how we've gone about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, they were very respectful.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Lots of shout outs to ATX DAO. So
you see it everywhere now, man. Yeah.
Did you see what I did? Like, wow. You see what we're doing with Dallas? Did
no.
you see it yet?
Yeah.
I woke up on Monday and I said, let's make DTX DAO. And it's like a real, like, I'm started it with them. Like, I helped them with the branding. I'm going to help them, like, do everything, get it off the ground so we can kind of, like, figure out exactly the playbook of how to do it.
So how do we connect all of these NFTs?
That's where I need to find some funding to build, like a city DAO network platform where we can all have, like, chat rooms, like global chat, local chat, like,
yep.
treasury management, everything. Like, spin up your city DAO. We have city DAO network.build already booked. We have CityDAO.network with, like, I mean, I showed Roberto yesterday. We have, like, some cool features built into it.
Are you guys plugged into, like, Web3 Social?
What's that? Oh, like the Rentech and shit?
Yeah, and, like, you know, Lens Protocol, some of the stuff that's happening there.
Yeah, I haven't really done much work on it.
So I was thinking about this the other day. Like, one of the cool things about NFTs is that they can be, like, these sort of, like, pop-up networks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So could we use that same approach with CityDAO,
mm-hmm.
where each CityDAO NFT, like whoever holds it, like that becomes a pop-up network, and then you have a network of networks.
What does a pop-up network mean?
What is a pop-up?
Yeah, so check this out. So we all have ATX DAO NFTs.
Right.
Do you know everybody in the DAO?
No.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Would you like to?
Sure.
I'd like to, right? Yeah. Like, and I'd like to at least be able to go into a chat room with all the people from ATX DAO.
Yeah.
Right?
Let's go Discord.
We have Discord, but
no,
Discord
no, we need
is
fresh.
So
fresh.
I agree. I'm with you.
Discord. Everybody hates it.
Dude, it's so much anxiety inducing, man.
It
I
is.
Hate
and
that application. Yeah.
It's a pain in the butt to take care of. It also isn't portable.
It's not portable, sure.
Right. So what if there were a protocol that people could basically plug your NFT into this protocol where you can have a social profile on chain associated with your NFT. And you can basically opt in to networks that you belong to when you hold that NFT.
You know, they have that on Urbit.
It's kind of that same idea.
There's a Urbit. Well, there's a guy, Hollium. He's in Austin. He's built an entire Urbit plugin where it's a full operating system. You sign in with your NFT.
Mm-hmm.
There's file management. There's chat rooms. There's video calling. And it's all associated with your NFT. So you like log in for your NFT. It's like, here's your NFT community. You can chat, call, and share files and have a shared note app. It's like everything. It's a full computer, like full software suite.
Yeah, I've heard,
but it's really hard to access.
Well, that's the thing.
I was gonna say, Urbit has such a high barrier to entry.
So, there is a company that does this. It's called Consul, out of like New York. This guy David Lieberman pitched. So I was part of like Edgeware, which is this first smart contract now on Polkadot. Like,
Consul XYZ.
Yes, Consul.xyz.
So I think I interviewed the founder.
Yeah, Dave Lieberman. Super cool dude. They do that.
Yeah.
So they do. They're kind of replicating this Discord modularity.
Mm-hmm.
I just applied for this for ATX DAO.
Like they want this whole thing with the NFT being like your DID functionality
to be
the gateway for you to come in and use all the tooling that they're creating, which is interesting.
That's cool.
Right? it's kind of an interesting proposition. Like, they're trying to do, like, kind of like a work suite with Discord built atop it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here's what I've been thinking about. Like, how do we vampire attack Web 2? Right? So how do we take this concept and then build plugins or ways that we can access existing social graphs?
Yeah.
Just the pieces that are associated with the NFTs. Right? And so you start flipping the script because now you have these groups of people who are connected by NFTs showing up as social networks.
Sure.
And now they're all connected. And these platforms are like, we didn't create that connection. We didn't create that group. They want to get in on that action. And so now they want to play ball. So now they start building different ways to interface with these on-chain associations.
Yeah.
Because users are starting to interact and migrate there.
I think there's going to be a challenge, man. Like, vampire attacking a social network in Web3 is going to be, you're basically trying to convince a bunch of users that are not familiar with crypto to all of a sudden join some other Web3 Twitter that it's possible. You haven't won that.
Not Web3 Twitter.
Trust me. Okay.
As a way to point to people on Web2 networks.
So that's
my small brain is not understanding.
Get the whiteboard. So your NFT, right? Let's say that you had some sort of profile.
Okay. So a lens, service. Basically. Like, yeah, if I have a lens
not,
NFT.
Not an on-chain profile, or it could be on-chain. But,
sure.
But you have this profile, mm-hmm. and it knows about your other NFTs.
Okay.
Right? And so yeah. It knows which NFTs you're connected to, kind of like Farcaster.
Oh, okay. When you're talking about connecting to NFTs, you're talking about an NFT that belongs to a collection.
Yes.
Like in this case would be the ATX DAO collection. Yes. Okay, yes. Gotcha.
And so that NFT is attached to my profile.
Mm-hmm.
My profile also has my Web2 social.
Yeah.
Right? And so now when I plug into the ATX DAO, or I plug ATX DAO into my profile,
yep.
It connects me. This is all opt-in, right?
Like yeah. If you want
to
yeah.
play, you play.
Yeah.
But it connects me to all of these people's Web2 profiles.
That's possible, actually. That's not crazy.
It makes it much easier to be able to find people where they are today.
That's not crazy. You can do that. I mean, Frentic did that to an extent, right? Like with Twitter sign-in. So yeah. You use that Twitter and Instagram and whatever other Web2 social platform you want to include. And I think the only added thing that you have to have in this year is like your social graph is constructed based on the collection of the NFT that you own.
Right.
So your social graph is essentially all of the ATX DAO members that have an NFT.
One of my social graphs.
Yes.
But now for the other however yeah. many NFTs.
Yeah, you can have, I don't know how many NFTs you have and how
I'm
many.
I'm not going to talk about last cycle. But...
Yeah. Compare the social graph of like a gated network, like let's say hypothetically, like, so Reddit did something like this, right? Where they had the Reddit coins and moon shit. You hear about
they
that?
They had NFTs, all the little creatures.
It's still good.
It's really cool.
They never sold it as that, which is a brilliant strategy. Right. Like, my thing is, like, how do you get Facebook or Meta, whatever the fuck they are calling themselves, in this next third turning, whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
To share their graph with your
you're not. No chance.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they're not sharing. Like, you're stealing it.
You're not going to get it. You have to steal it. Yeah, you can. Like, the way that he's talking about it is if I, let's say, very practically, I opt in into this Web3 social network with an NFT.
Yeah.
And I opt in and I say, I'm going to bring my social graph from Twitter.
Okay.
And I'm going to share this social graph with every other person that owns an ATX DAO NFT. So now I can see your social graph on Twitter. I can see your social graph on Twitter. I can see your social graph on Twitter. And we're all connected via the ATX DAO NFT. So now I see all of your Twitter connections, And the reason why I can see that is because we're connected because of the ATX NFT.
Right.
That's the vampire attack that Nick is talking about.
So graph aggregation.
Yeah.
It's basically
graph aggregation. Based on NFT. We can call it FriendBridge.
FriendBridge, okay.
Only friends.
I don't think that's insane. I don't think that's crazy.
Here's you're not obviously going to siphon off millions and millions of users overnight.
No,
what
you won't.
What it's going to do is it could raise the flag and the awareness at Web2 companies
mm-hmm.
that like, oh, shit, this is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are actually finding each other outside of our network.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we want to figure out a way to cooperate with this technology.
Yeah.
Roberto, we were gonna talk about you.
We're going to talk about some things, okay.
We're going to talk about some things, yeah. Well, let's talk about some things.
All right.
Why don't you start by telling us who you are? I mean, just...
I'm a fan of that question. I can give you the 30-minute answer, or I can give you the 5-minute answer, or I can give you the 30-minute answer. But my journey, I guess I'll focus my journey on how I ended up in crypto. And then I'll talk about ATX in particular.
Don't edit it. Like, We want the full story.
I'm giving you the full story. I'm giving you all the bit. You're giving me a little hook, and I'm going to give you like 5 minutes of podcast here. Okay, so I started my career at BlackRock. GG's, Larry. Thank you for all the ATF things that you're doing, my man. He's the best cheerleader now. Thanks for sponsoring the podcast. I started my career there in 2017. And
Wait, what's your background?
I studied finance and statistics. Okay. I did finance and accounting, and then I realized I need to have a harder skill set. I need to learn how to program. I need to learn math, et cetera, et cetera. And then I discovered this very niche thing in finance called quantitative finance, which is has to do with a blend of stats, machine learning, and then financial theory. So when I realized that's kind of the path that I wanted to do, I dropped accounting because it was incredibly boring, and then went to finance and accounting. I actually never really finished my finance degree, so I'm just a statistician, but I was like one class away from finishing my finance class.
Okay.
So the reason why I didn't finish is because BlackRock gave me an offer, and I had to stay another semester to finish my finance degree, and I was like, I want to start making money now, so I'm not going to finish my degree. Peace. So
did
I went.
Did you have a particular focus in finance?
Not really.
Okay.
No. It was focused entirely on when I went into BlackRock, I went into their risk management branch.
Okay.
And the group that I worked at was called Risk and Quantitative Analysis. And this guy, Ben Golub, he's a CRO of BlackRock. He spent countless years and hours building just all the theory around how do you risk manage a portfolio. So it was a hardcore 2 years. I was there, and my focus was on the multi-asset side of things. So like portfolios that build, that are built with bonds, equities, commodities, et cetera, et cetera. So I was there for 2 years. And then 2 years later, I moved on to this other part of the firm called, FIGA, which was an internal hedge fund that focused on quantitative investing in credit markets. So basically trading bonds with little bots running around. 2019, I caught the crypto bug, and I was still in.
Were you building the bots?
I was building. The bots are really a euphemism for really just building signals.
Yeah, yeah.
And just writing code is like a lot less like exciting than what people actually think. It's like you're not just deploying all these bots and they're making you money. Like it's actually pretty boring.
That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. People think it's really cool, but it's like okay, like you're just writing some like Python code and you're running.
Yeah.
2019, I caught the crypto bug, and my friend said, hey, I'm building this Ethereum rig to mine Ethereum. I'm like, cool. Whatever. I'll give you some money to like buy the GPUs and start mining this thing.
What was the price of ETH?
I think that ETH was, like it was, I remember Black Tuesday. Black Tuesday when MakerDAO broke.
Oh, yeah.
That was, I think, March of 2020. Before the pandemic.
Wait, I thought that was at ETH Denver.
Well, ETH Denver is in April.
I know. That's
it's like around like...
I was at ETH Denver and I think I remember...
MakerDAO totally imploding.
Yeah.
So it was around that time and I think ETH dipped below 100. It was like ETH was like in the 90s back then.
We have
something like
that. Hours.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Right. That's the last time ETH goes below...
Yeah.
Pull up that Ryan tweet, guys. Let's pull it up right now.
It actually took me a while to get back into crypto because, in 2017, we had the whole ICO era, and it was just pure mayhem. You know, like, I remember coming home from the office, and I used to trade with these two guys, and we'd just be like, yo, ICO this, ICO that, ICO that. I lost a ton of money on that. And I think in 2017, I was really into it, but I was also really... just fresh out of college. So I was very impressionable and I think very naive. And I remember I was one of the quote unquote lucky analysts to be able to have a lunch with Larry and with Ben Golub, which was the CRO.
Cool.
It was great.
Yeah.
I was like, this is fantastic. I want to talk with these guys. And the first thing that I said is, you're in this big room with 30 other analysts and everyone's quiet and weird because you have these two guys there and you're like, it's just an uncomfortable situation. So I was like, yo, Larry, what do you think about this Bitcoin thing? Or this, what do you think about Bitcoin? I remember clearly Ben responding and saying, that's just absolutely trash. Like, do not worry about it. And I was, in my head, I'm thinking, yes, sir. Like, you're so rich and you're so famous that I'm going to listen to you. I should not have listened to them. But fast forward to 2019, my friend starts to build an ETH rig, and I said, okay, cool, let's just build this thing. And naturally, when you start, when you put money into something, in a sizable amount of money, because back then GPUs were not a cheap thing, you start looking more into it. You start just naturally like, okay, let me like look what these smart contracts are and what Ethereum is, and what Bitcoin is, and how it works. And I'm sure all of you guys have had the same experience where like once you have a little taste of crypto, you just dive right in. So 2019, and I was just very, very eager to get into crypto. So 2020 happened, the pandemic happened, everything started to just go to the moon. And around mid 2020, Mazari had this thing called the Community Analyst Program. And for the audience that doesn't know who Mazari is, it's a data company in the space. And one of the things that they used to do is to write a lot of the asset profiles that filled out the application. They would just have this community analyst program, which is basically like you're below like an intern, you know? So
okay.
It's like you have interns and you're below an intern. You're like the intern's intern. And your entire job is to, hey, we want to have a profile, a written profile about XYZ coin. So like go do some research, write a few paragraphs on it, write about the technology, write about the token emissions, et cetera, and submit it to our researchers.
Just a quick question. Yeah. At that time, were they doing that stupid Excel shit that they used to do for onboarding? Remember, they gave this fucking Excel sheet. And they're like, fill in all this stupid shit that you have to fill in.
That's before that.
That's before that.
Oh, okay. That stupid spreadsheet came out of how much of that. Yeah.
I saw that shit. That's
yes. Yes.
Fast.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Like there was no spreadsheet before.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So I joined that when basically we formalized that whole asset profile with the spreadsheet, which is massive. I totally agree. But I was like, dude, anything. Literally anything to get into crypto. So I did that for about 6 months. And then one of the CRO right now, the chief revenue officer, Eric Moss, said, hey, there's a research role opening up. What do you think? And I'm like, dude, fuck yeah. Like anytime, line me up. But I want to get my bonus paid. So we're going to have to wait until March. So I waited until March. Got my bonus, and then I just dipped to BlackRock, and I said, let's just do this thing with Mazari. And at
When did they launch Mazari Pro?
When did they launch Mazari Pro?
Yeah.
I think, so Mazari started in 2018.
Right, because I remember a friend introduced me to Mazari, and I was like, he knew somebody there, and he's like, you should give this thing a shot, and I looked at it, it was kind of janky in the beginning, and I was like,
oh, dude, they were scrappy, man.
This doesn't look very good, but this was still like when, like, I think CMC had a stranglehold on.
I see.
Oh, right. CMC.
Yeah.
That was a while ago, man. No, like,
and this is before Bottom. And
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I remember when that happened. I was like,
yeah. So. Yeah, exactly.
It's Joe.
Everybody knew it. No, but okay. So like 2019 is when Pro came out.
I want to say 20. Yeah. I think the
that's
Pro
when they
subscription
really started pouring a lot of resources into research.
Right. And then I think in 2020 or mid 2020, Enterprise came out, which was the other business line.
Okay.
Which is higher end, it was higher end research, and it was also access to the API and governance and all these other products.
Didn't they have Slack access too?
Yeah, like for Intel.
Exactly.
So one of those things that
briefings.
Exactly. So like if you're tracking what's happening with Uniswap and you wanted to see everything that happened with the token, you just get it in Slack.
So they would charge you an ass load of money to talk to
Rebecca. That is true. That is absolutely true. Yeah. They pay my salary. Okay.
Roberto getting like 10,000 messages being like, this is what happened here.
You'd be shocked how much work that takes, man. So like the Intel guys, shout out to Aiden, who has been grinding that for a while. They have to have coverage for like 24/7 basically. So like if something happens in some random protocol, like we have to report it. And basically. So not with AI though. What's that?
Mazari's badass.
It's an awesome company.
Brought to you by Mazari.
Mazari, yes, it's a good company. So I was doing research there for a while, about 8 months, and believe it or not, I was the only person in the company that could write Python.
No way. Really?
The rest of the guys were engineers, heavy on JavaScript, React, like very just hardcore software engineering.
I thought you were gonna say Rust.
Not Rust. No. I think that trend came out like in 2022, dude. Like when this whole Solana thing took off. But I was the only one that could write Python and had some data science background or somewhat of experience in stats and programming. So that was enough evidence for Celcus to say, go build me a data science team. And I was like, bro, I have no fucking clue how to do this, but hell yeah, I'll try. So I think month number 9th, I started building the data science team. And my...
I remember talking to you and you were just like, you're like, I'm interviewing 4,000 people.
Literally. I was just like, what the fuck am I doing, man? Like, but my guiding principle was like, ask the guys that are there right now, like Mike Kremer, Alex Kahn, Yule, like these guys might not be like the most incredible data scientist ever, but they were degens. And that's kind of what I wanted. I was like, dude, I don't want to talk to you about your technical skills. Like, what is the most degen shit that you have done this past week? And then that was the threshold, essentially. And there was a lot of people that I would interview and I would say, hey, have you ever used MetaMask? And they're like, what is MetaMask? And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Right. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to talk to you. Like, bye.
There was an era where the interview was basically like, just send me an ETH address so I can look at the
literally. So Mike Kremer, this is the first guy that we hired. I hired that guy because he had his ENS profile in his resume. And I was like, hired. I don't have to see anything else. Like, hired. Yeah. So that was the process. And then we grew that from 3 guys to 12. And then it got to the point where we got really big and it got really operational. And then there was an opportunity. One of the guys that used to work with Ryan Watkins and his co-founder, they left Mazari to raise a fund. Like currently right now, I work at Synchrosy Capital, and they raised a fund, and they needed a data scientist. And I was like, dude, I know crypto, I know data science, and I have a background in investing. So let me know if you're down. And he's like, I'm down. I'm like, okay, cool. So I left Mazari in March of this year, and I've just been managing this fund since then.
That's fucking dope.
All right, so I want to ask you some questions.
Sure.
So crypto obviously fascinated you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the price action is obviously a draw for most everybody in the space. You see it go up, and it's just like, it hits different.
Sure.
$5.
Yeah.
But what's your... Do you have an attachment to the ideology of crypto? Like, talk to us about the, you know, what do you think it does for society or beyond just number go up? Like, what's cool about it?
So Chris Dixon from Andreessen Horowitz put out a piece on how that dynamic works, where price leads to attention leads to devs leads to building leads to price. So you have this cycle like that. More important, like, obviously I was drawn to crypto from the equity like moves that you see in the space. Basically, my idea was, I do this at BlackRock, let me just do this in another place, the same skill set. But what crypto opens up, the whole idea of like a decentralized, at least when you look at Bitcoin, like a decentralized digital gold, brings in quite a few attributes that are really important, or I think that are really valuable, like the open permissionless aspect of a lot of these systems. The fact that I can just join Ethereum as a validator without anyone telling me, like I can just join in, I have 32 ETH, I can just join in and start validating the chain, is incredible. The fact that I can build on top of these ledgers without being concerned about being censored, or about Ethereum changing the rules of how I can build an application, I think that is huge. And that's something that you don't see too much in incumbent tech companies, right? Like if I build on an API that is developed by Google, Google can just one day wake up, like the dev can just wake up and say like, I want to change this. And then you have to change the entire thing about that. So the open and permissionless aspect of the system is what I thought was incredible. And of course, like number go up is fun.
Bonus.
Yeah.
So, your time at BlackRock.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any other colleagues that followed?
I was an outcast, man. I was hated.
They're all picking themselves now.
Yeah, exactly.
I was hated, dude. I was hated in my team. I used to work with.
Did you do the Jerry Maguire out the door?
Dude, let me tell you, like, the first, before I got into crypto, I was a huge Tesla bull. I was like, guys, Tesla, Tesla, Tesla. And, like, that's back then when Tesla was just eating shit in terms of revenue. And I would go and I would hang out with, I mean, like, the entire group that I was with, like, to give you a context of, like, the caliber of people that were there, they're this PhD from Booth and this Stanford master's from statistics and UC Berkeley everywhere. My boss was some PhD in economics from UPenn. All these links to the fact that accolades mean nothing to me because I was around those people and I realized they're basically the same. Yeah. But if I'm coming in, I went to UTSA. You guys have no idea what you're saying.
UTSA, let's go!
Roadrunners, beep, beep. Yes, yes. But no one knows, essentially. Real, so I was, very much like, at all with all of these guys. Or all these people. And I think that those universities at least lead you down a path of thinking like, this is kind of what thing that I gotta do. And I have noticed that I've always been a little bit like, fuck it, man. Like, let's just see what is interesting. Like, the path of most uncertainty and interestingness is what draws me. Like, is what I'm interested in. So, like, back then, Tesla was one of those things that I was like, this dude is building something fucking crazy. And back then, Elon would write this part one and part two of his, like, mega plans. And I read that and I was like, I took a loan. I took a loan from UTSA. I remember it was like $3,000. And I just took it alone. I didn't need the money, but I just put it in Tesla. And I was like, dude, it's going to fucking move. Nice. And he did. And he was like, it was great. So I got hooked on that. And then when I started experiencing that same hate with Bitcoin in BlackRock, it was like, okay, whatever. Like, you guys don't understand me. I'm this outcast. And like, for a while, you're thinking like, okay, maybe I'm like a moron. Because back then, like I was telling you, Black Tuesday happened. Yeah. ETH was going to the shitter. Yeah. And back then, my boss, I remember 2020. Yeah, in 2020, he was this, not a huge fan. I wasn't a huge fan of Ron Ratcliffe. I'm going to call him out. Ron Ratcliffe, yes. He had this idea of like putting us all together. We had a team of five people. And back then, he would be like, hey, you know what? Let's do this trade simulation thing where we're all going to simulate that we're going to invest $1 million on whatever asset you want. And the guys that I was with, they got all fancy. Let's just do like EMEA equities, or let's do style factors with some random equities. And I was like, Bitcoin in 2020.
Yeah.
And I ate shit for a lot of 2020. Like, I was just eating shit because we had this like weekly reminder of like, oh, let's look at the returns with everyone. And I was just eating shit. And then towards the end, before I left, Bitcoin basically mooned. And that's when I think the perception changed. Like the idea, literally, yes, yes. He's like, suck it. And I remember the last email that I wrote to the team, I was like, hey guys, I love working with you guys. It was fantastic, yada, yada, yada. If you guys decide to do this investing thing once again, I'll put all my money on Ethereum. And I think that panned out pretty well. So I think that there was a lot of... there was a lot of hate at the beginning, yeah. But slowly people started catching on that there's something valuable here. Now, if you ask me now, if they think that, probably not. Because the price just went to shit. So,
well, okay, so let's dig into that. Because, yeah. Like, I mean, we've all been in the space for a little while. Like, you've all been through the Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah. Cycle. That's a great meme, by the way. God, that's yeah. A great meme. That's a great meme, yes.
So, it's not even a meme, man.
No, it's true.
It's so real.
Well, we can walk Brian, in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah, no, just wait. Right.
Just wait. No, I'm waiting for a little bit more.
Just walking with a little angle in the dangle.
Yeah.
So what was your entire crypto journey?
Yeah.
Your moment of despair.
Oh, man. Lowest point. I remember it vividly. I was in Argentina and Buenos Aires, and I was out there for... LabitConf, which is one of the biggest Latin America conferences, repping Messari. And that's when FTX just started to go shit, like garbage. And I told a lot of my family and a lot of my friends, like,
oh, no.
Put your money in Sol. Oh, no. Like, Sol is going to go to the moon. Not financial advice, but it will go to the moon. It's back then, it was tough because at least the technology in Sol is fantastic. Like when you look at I don't know if you want to talk about Solana, but I'm going to take it there purely because purely because nothing really material has changed except that there was this.
We have all cryptos on the show.
Fantastic. Okay. You don't want to talk. You don't want to talk about Cardano?
Oh,
I got some. I can give you my Cardano thesis if you want to, Nick. Like,
the vulnerability.
Dude, I'm gonna defend Cardano for.
Wait. Who hates Cardano here?
It seems like there's obviously some person sitting to the right side.
Who hates Cardano? No, who loves Cardano? Let's say that. That's the consensus. That is the non-consensus bet right now. Who is
I love Cardano, but it's already successful.
You with Deliver, so you got experience at building.
Yeah, like it's up and running. People plug on that one, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But that being said, like, dude, like they, it's. I mean, people have problem with their tech. Sometimes people have problem with the
Charles.
Yeah, with Charles,
the King, Charles.
Yeah, all that shit. But like, the reality is like, dude, like, as far as like, regular people go, advocating for an L1,
mm-hmm.
like it's surprisingly like.
Yeah, there's a rabid community.
Yeah, regular people that can get into it.
Yeah.
Right, where it's like ETH seems to be a little bit more of a different type of a crowd.
Sure.
There is still regular people, but like. It's really funny. Like, so our garage door broke down in our house. I had the garage guy come fix it. I don't fucking want to fuck with those springs. I've seen the YouTube videos. That shit goes right.
The springs can go
right. I'll fucking murder you, bro.
Yeah.
That's another fun Google while you take a shit, by the way. Especially if you're
caught. We took it there, bro.
Yeah,
okay.
Going
we got to keep it exciting, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A little bit of toilet humor never, you know, had the quant team built out.
Mm-hmm.
Like at Indigo. And he's like, whoa, I know that fucking thing. And he's on his Twitter space, and he's talking to me, and I was like, how the fuck do you know more about this shit than I do?
Yeah.
Because I'm just, like, focused on this, like, force blocks. But, like, it's just, it's surprising. The guy who's fixing my garage knows this and wants to talk about this more than he. This is, like...
For sure.
This is, like, the
market. It is more of a retail coin,
dude,
I would say.
My old, one of my old, like...
That's fair.
You, Uber drivers will talk about Cardano and ADA more than ETH.
I gotta defend Cardano for some new members of ATXDAO that build on it.
For real, for real. You can't hate on the ATXDAO is chain agnostic.
I'm not hating on the tech. Maybe it's just because I'm not as plugged into the ecosystem, but
sure.
It just doesn't seem like as a chain they've done a great job of promoting the progress that's happening. Because it's like
that is true.
These stories of people that are building and doing cool things with it, and I'm like, why isn't that a headline? Like,
yeah.
They're missing the PR aspect of this chain, right? Like so.
Yeah.
You know, and it's. You can hate on that aspect because it's marketing, but at the same time, it's really, really important for adoption.
You got to do it.
100.
Yeah. You got to do it. So going back to the question, no, all good, man. I love the enthusiasm on the toilet conversation on that. That was hilarious.
So what's got to keep it lowbrow?
low point. We're talking about low point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Buenos Aires. I was like almost crying in my hotel room, dude. And I have a close friend of mine. He's dedicated to exposing scams on YouTube. And I was talking to him, and he was basically just like following.
This podcast is brought to you by Zach XBT.
Not Zach. Yes, yes. Yeah. Basically like a Zach XBT, yeah. Similar vein, but in YouTube. And I was just talking to him, and I was just like, man, this is painful. Like, it was like moment of depression there because... I not only told a lot of my friends and family, like, hey, like, Sol is going to be fantastic. And you just see it crumbling. I mean, like, it was just such an idiosyncratic thing to that coin that when it happened, everything tanked. Except, everything was tanking, but Solana was just, like, tanking times 10,000.
Yeah.
So that was rough. And I think it was mostly around the advice that I gave people around Solana. That was the most painful. Not because I lost, I mean, yes, like... lost a bunch of money on that, but it was mostly around getting people involved in it. And what I tell them now is just huddle hard, because I just came back from Breakpoint and in Amsterdam, and you see the excitement is palpable around this token, around this layer one. Brief aside on that side, one of the cool things about Sol is that they attracted this set of devs that are independent of Ethereum. So they've been able to bring in a lot of Web2 engineers and also a lot of people that work in quant finance to build on Sol. So there's not a lot of overlap. When you're thinking about like competing ecosystem for devs, for dev talent to build applications, they've just carved this little niche in Web2. And what I found is really cool about that is that these people have a pretty solid understanding of what a consumer wants because they've built on Web 2. Whereas if you look at in like web, if you're like a Web 3 native person and you've never built a product for the masses, it's hard for you to ultimately get to that point from a consumer point of view. But if you're a Web 2 engineer and you've seen how fan companies have been built around how to face the consumer, and now you come to Web 3, you bring that experience with you.
Totally. You know, I was at NFT NYC a while back.
And, yeah.
You know, of course, it's like ETH heavy.
Uh-huh.
And so you're going to these different activations and stuff. And, you know, on the Web3 side at those events and like, yeah, your MetaMask, like you don't have to explain a lot of things because people are down the rabbit hole. But I went to this activation at an art museum or an art gallery. It was a Soul photo booth.
Mm-hmm.
And so you walk up and it was a app where they basically take your picture, it mints an NFT. It shows up in a wallet,
mm-hmm.
and you do this all within like 3 or 4 taps.
Mm. Wow.
And it was so
seamless,
so freaking seamless. I was like, oh, no, this actually
it's this great tech. Good. It's great
this,
tech.
Wow, this is really good.
It's like, great tech. Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I think there is something to that.
That's, yeah.
That's an interesting backstory on the dev side.
Yeah. The dev side, one thing. There's notice too how these ecosystems have a figurehead. Yeah. Terra Luna had Do Kwon.
Dude, do you remember when
everyone was freaking out in ATXL, by the way? Like, there were all these messages. I wrote this message, I remember, on the general channel saying, like, guys, we're here. We're going to make it. This is going to be fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And all of our treasuries in USDC, by the way. So we're chilling.
No, we had like a few. We had some money.
We had a little bit. But like, we're talking about like maybe 5% was in.
That was a dark day.
Speculation. That was a dark day.
No, we had some in, we were running our expense wallet on
Antera. Yes, I know. Just for the lore of people, yes. Yeah, but basically our checking account, you know, like where we have like a little bit amount of the treasury was on Terra.
Well, if you go back and look at our application, you fill this one out for like Zilker, it's like, what is your ETH wallet? What is your Terra wallet?
Yeah. So we were involved in the ecosystem just like everyone else. I mean, like when you go to Anchor and you're saying, I can get 20% on my DAI, like,
oh, yeah.
For sure I'll take it.
I remember the Defiant, he did a video and it was all about Anchor.
Yeah.
Like this total walkthrough and like, this is.
Yeah, this is great.
Straight up magic and money, man.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. John McDonald, for like the, one of the OG ATXL guys, he was like, dude, that website?
No. Sus.
he's like, that's not it. I don't believe in it. And I was like, are you sure, man? 20%?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's no, like, I'm not putting my money in that.
It was enticing. It was enticing back then. But figureheads. They're figurehead Anatoly. Fantastic dude. And like when you talk to him, this dude is, I've had the chance to speak with him once, but you can tell this dude is a nerd about optimizing distributed systems. Like that's all he cares about. He's not punching down. He's just like an absolute nerd, and he's built a community of nerds around him.
He came out of Qualcomm, right?
Qualcomm. Yeah.
He connects Telecom.
Yeah, I saw him speak.
He moved here from San Diego.
Yeah.
So it's his scene. He was up in Solana.
Uh-huh.
I was actually at a conference. It was like a decentralized security conference.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually when they were starting to, they hadn't launched the network yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just in the process of like
working on it,
getting a token together. So yeah, but
Qualcomm, and he was doing distributed database work.
Yep.
Which is basically what a blockchain is.
Yeah. 100%.
You know, it's like a database and a bunch of different computers, and the only thing is like you got to sync them all together really quickly. So that's what he's doing.
Which is actually a really hard problem.
It's a very hard problem, but is he, unlike you see other figureheads like Vitalik is super crypto native, but no, and a fantastic programmer, but no experience particularly in working in distributed systems. So Anatoly came in.
Just
yeah.
A little bit.
Sure.
But that being said, I am the resident idiot out of, constantly feeling forward and up. That's what
dude, it is. Dude, yes.
On your face.
That's yes, it. Yes, that's exactly right.
Question.
Yeah.
So I don't hold any soul.
Sure.
Not anymore, anyways. Not on this fund. But like, that being said, I've heard a lot of like interesting things about validator tech that's being run by Jump.
Right.
Right. And the Fire Dancer stuff, which is like super exciting. Mm-hmm. Right. But any thoughts and concerns about Jump being like a centralized party that's like running all this validator.
That's true. If you look at, we're gonna have a big piece talking about this coming out of the phone at some point.
You heard heard it here first.
Yes. Yeah, you literally heard it here first.
Also, post notifications. Also, sponsors of our podcast?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Okay, get
we're too close. Yeah. That's Jump, I think Jump was a big player for a while, but they actually left the ecosystem after the FTX collapse. Yeah. So again, I think the FTX collapse was a blessing in disguise because it was a big tumor in the ecosystem.
It was a washout. It needed to happen.
Yeah. It needed to happen. And Jump left in that same wave. Yeah. If you look at roughly the Nakamoto of Solo, like you're looking at about 32. Nakamoto, for the audience that is not familiar with it, is a measure of validator decentralization. So at least on the Solo side, the biggest criticism that you get is the hardware requirements. Like it is really hard to run a validator. In reality, is like
it's a high bar.
It's a high bar, but it's, I mean, if $300 a month on a server is high, then
yeah, I get it. There's trade-offs.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
there's all trade-offs. I
mean, the ETH Maxis would go.
The ETH Maxis will not love it because I think I have had this conversation so many times now, where it really boils down to ideology. Like Ethereum is building. The core idea of Ethereum is that any user anywhere should be able to validate the chain.
Right?
If you have enough money.
No. Like the point with ETH is that you should be able to do it with your phone.
Yep. Anybody should be able to walk up and use the chain, validate the chain.
Yeah.
Like be an active participant.
Exactly. In the chain. That is their ideology.
There's no minimum
stake. That stake requirement continuously moves.
Right.
Right. So it's like disenchanting to like anyone who's like less than maybe $10,000,
right?
And be like, yo, I'm gonna drop 10K.
Well, ETH validator, like you need 32 ETH, that's cheap.
That's what I'm saying.
That is cheap. But it's still.
But then you have options like Lido or Rocket Pool where you can still buy it.
You can aggregate capital.
It's possible. Solana Scudology.
But like in reality, if we're gonna have a stable network,
yeah,
and we're actually gonna have the
Do have to set a bar,
and we do have it's going to be a constant trade-off between accessibility and performance.
Agreed.
And we have to draw the line somewhere.
That's exactly right. You got to draw it somewhere. The ideology of ETH is that it's like anyone should be able to validate. The ideology of Ethereum, of Solana, is we want to reach consensus across all computers as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And they take advantage of Murphy's Law, and they take advantage of use the full suite and the power of what the computers can do with all the cores, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to dive too much on that. It's really fast.
I was messing with it today. And I was like, whoa.
But that's their idea. It's like, great. Okay, like, cool. Like, not everyone's going to be able to validate, but this thing will reach consensus faster than everything else.
Yeah.
So
Visa's looking at them, right?
What's that?
Visa's looking at them.
Visa is using them for remittances now.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's...
I heard like yesterday.
Yeah, pretty
first. It's been, I think a couple of weeks now. Visa came out and said, like, we're going to do our USD settlement on remittances on Sol. Yeah.
Because they know they're going to get disrupted.
Yeah. They're like, you either join them or you die. Yes.
So, okay. As an extension of that question, and I guess this, like, shifts, but still very relevant on, like, the payments and the micropayments kind of narrative mm-hmm. that Solana's trying to capture,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is, it seems like that's the thing, right? No one's trying to move, like, $100,000, $100 million.
No.
Like, you're trying to move anything, I don't know, like, in my mind, anything like 10K less, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Right? So, and that doesn't really meet the traditional bar of micropayment, but fuck it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just going to put it in that category for right
now. Right.
Right. That being said, there is this news that, like, apparently I forget what the authoritarian body is in the United States, like, where a list of ABC acronyms, right? That they said that apparently Venmo and PayPal and stuff like that should be regulated much like this.
Mm.
This is a traditional Web2 established kind of
platform. Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, how does that, like, play into these considerations of, like, hey, Solana wants to do a micropayments narrative,
yep.
This is what's going to happen.
Yep.
Like, are there any thoughts and concerns about that or anything like that? Just asking as...
I have no idea on the regulatory side, to be honest with you. Like,
the difference I would put out there is, like, peer-to-peer.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily disqualify them from...
There's some regulation with vendors, for example. It's like, how, if I want to pay USDC and settle on Sol to pay for my taco, like, across the street, they have to comply on some sort of regulation on that.
Who in that scenario? The merchant?
The merchant.
Interesting.
Yeah. The merchant, I think, because, I mean, if you put yourself in those shoes, it's like the merchant tomorrow, they can just spin up a wallet, create a barcode for it, and say, hey, you want to pay in USDC? Like, just scan this barcode and pay me. But then when you go from wallet to your bank account, that's when it gets a little murky, right? Like, because then the bank is thinking, like, where's the money coming from? From the merchant point of view.
AML perspective.
Like, yes, KYC AML. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just interesting, right? Because it's like that's the big narrative, right? Where everyone's talking about micropayments or like becoming like the payments kind of like intermediary.
Yep.
Or building infrastructure for payments.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Like having as someone who's like all of us directly invested or used or built in DeFi, right? Like this is the new wave that we're all kind of feeling. That was tendrils.
Yeah.
And I always just like, as someone who's like now trying to like not build in that space.
Yeah.
And maybe build like outside of it on outside of it, not even on Ethereum anymore. But I'm just wondering like, how does that affect in these
things? Sure.
Because it's like, if a whole change narrative becomes this thing where it's like, where are the payments?
Payments. Today? Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah,
but I mean, I think still Sol is like you said, like tech specific.
At some point,
it's fucking dope.
It's solid. Yeah,
it's legit. It's legit.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty still around a lot of these things, but one of the interesting things about it too is you see the arcs of these communities. Yeah. Bitcoin has gone through their arc.
Yeah.
ETH has gone through their arc, and ETH, if you look at 2017, 2018, they went through a dark period of time.
Oh, yeah. A lot of discontentment.
Yeah, CryptoKitties and ICOs, and this is just a chain for ICOs, and it went below 100, and the community just rallied around that. And I think that if you use history as a guiding principle, community, it rallied to like 200, it collapsed, FTX was a huge backer, totally disseminated, the token went down to shit, and then now you see the community now rallying around it. So we'll see.
Yeah, you guys were 100% right. I mean, I feel like one of these things, these drawdowns that they clearly show in communities itself is that you see the people on the community side and the dev side that are there for like, oh, wow, I really believe in
this. Yeah.
Right? You might not necessarily believe in the tech or understand the tech, but you might be like, yo, like, I know these guys.
Right.
And like, they got me, I got them.
Yeah.
And like, we're going to fucking ride or die this shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that Dominic Toretto kind of.
It's very much right. Like tribalism, you know? Like, yeah. People have tribes.
I mean, anybody who's been to ETH Denver, like, that is a wacky event. Right?
It is, man. It is.
It's all love and rainbows. But it is. Like, if you don't think there's a major social component to crypto.
For sure.
Yeah.
You haven't been in it.
For sure. Yeah, like, for sure. For sure.
That's a big part of this whole narrative.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing, right? It's funny because I like explain crypto to my wife,
who's
like way smarter than me.
Sure.
Right? But it's
all smarter than us.
Yeah, that
all of our wives are smarter than us.
Shout out to our wives.
Shout out to our wives
of our podcast. Yes, exactly. I'll be home in a little bit, love, and then you can lecture me soon. Yeah. But it's kind of funny, right? Because like we talk about, she's like, you don't even know these people. Like you just see a handle on Discord, a handle on Twitter, and like you're shit talking each other.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you don't even see this person, and you're sending them this money.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, I can trust them.
Yeah.
Like there's a shared kind of consensus of all like all of us being.
We're all
like,
in it, man.
Yeah.
Whack me, you know, like let's go.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah.
You and as someone who's been a suit and tie guy, right? It's weird. You never got that vibe.
Then. Never.
You got this vibe.
Never.
Like, I remember being an intern and then working in those places, and I was like, you would just be like, we're just going to get smashed, but it would never be like, yo, we're like, we're in it to make it. We're all like kind of like low key, like competing against each other. Low key, like trying to show each other up. But like over here, it's like, yo, you took a loss. That's fucking dope.
That's
right?
True.
Like, it's like, that's awesome.
There is the element of like, I think there's a social aspect where you build relationships around this too. But there's also, you're so financially invested.
Yeah.
So if the token goes to the moon, everyone's excited. So there's the social aspect and there's the financial aspect, which I think makes crypto incredibly tribal.
Well, and you know, I think to that point, it's also like, because it's this weird thing that a lot of people don't understand, or it was, a lot of people understand now, but in the beginning, it was this weird thing nobody understood. And so when you saw some of those gains and got excited, like, you couldn't like there was nobody in your normal life to talk to about
people
it.
Don't
right?
get it. People don't get it.
Celebrate
yeah.
with. So yeah. you find these people online, you're like, fuck yeah, we're going to the moon.
Oh
yeah,
absolutely. There's something special about having other people to share it with. It's like my brother and I are the only two that I know outside of you guys that are into this stuff, and then people that I met in crypto Twitter, Discords, things like that. So it's a huge thing, I feel.
Yeah,
that just having people to like have like beers after and say, hey, we're going to the moon.
Right.
Yeah.
Or also when I think the bear market is when like you actually bond with people.
Oh, yeah.
Because you realize these are the people that actually are here for the right reasons, not the tourists.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
That's when the bonding really happens. And I think that for me, I went into crypto in the tail end of the last bear market. Mm-hmm. And I rode that thing to the top and then I rode it all the way to the bottom. And basically, I just made my closest friends in that period of time. And then the bear market is when you're like, oh, okay. These are the people that actually believe in this. And absolutely. Like the people yep. that want to build. So it's that moniker of building the bear market.
Yeah.
Totally. Like
yeah.
that is real, man. That is very real. And we all experience it now. So
I feel like, not that I had an agenda here, but you teed me up for something that's been on my mind.
Which I knew that.
I mean, we're talking about social and crypto.
Mm-hmm.
The DAO. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, DAOs are really, at the end of the day, it's about bringing people together to do things. And in our case, ATX DAO,
mm-hmm.
it started with let's get together and talk about crypto. Yeah. You're an OG literally, for the DAO. Like you're one of the founding members, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. So walk us through ATX DAO, your connection to Mason. Like, how did it all go down?
Sure. Okay. So we started the DAO. My wife is going to hate me for saying this, but the reality is like, I would just talk her ear off about crypto all the time. And it got to the point where she was like, I love crypto, but I also don't want to talk about crypto all the time. So how about you guys make some friends out there and talk crypto with them? And I'm like, sure, darling, I'll do that. And I did that. And I met.
It was like the dude's version of The Bachelor.
Dude, for real. Like, you're only going to find dudes in crypto, seriously. So this ATX DAO thing started. We were getting shit-faced at Lazarus. And it was me, Malcolm Navarro, John, Kyle Krasicki, and Clifton. Mm-hmm. And we were just getting just lit-faced, basically. Just like, yeah. And then we should start a DAO, and we should do all these things. And okay,
you know
cool.
those cats?
I met them like maybe a couple of weeks before that day.
Okay.
But I was just like, okay, these guys want to talk about shitcoins. And
you
the
moved
next...
here from the Bay.
What's that?
You moved here from the Bay.
That's right. So, yeah. So I was, when I was working at BlackRock, I was in San Francisco for 4 years, but I finished my college. I went to college in San Antonio mm-hmm. and then finished high school in Austin. So I don't want to say I'm a transplant from California because I was first in Texas and then went to California
and then realized.
Exactly. I'm a boomerang. So yeah, I met those guys a couple of weeks before we started the DAO, and the DAO just started from like, hey, like let's just hang out and talk about crypto. And one day we said, hey, actually I don't even remember. I think I don't even remember how we told people, hey, we're gonna hang out at Lazarus, and then 25 people showed up, and I was like, okay, cool. Like that's when I met Mason and Jesse. They showed up and like they started drinking beers, and I was like, this is cool. So what's next? Let's just do a party. And basically we did a party, and there's a video proof of it. And we did a party on, it was like downtown, and we just rented a place.
Where was that party? Was that the rooftop party?
It wasn't. That was the second one.
That was the second one. Okay.
That was the second one. Yeah. Yeah. That was our first minting party.
Yeah. Okay.
No, at first party was basically just like get people riled up, and like we all, the five founders, we all put, I think it was like something like $2,000 to like pay for this thing.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it was like, now that I see where ATX DAO went, I was like, that is incredible investment.
Yeah.
But the entire recipe that we had is just, let's just, crypto's going to the moon, people want to drink, let's just bring them all together and have a party. And we had that party, and then we realized, okay, let's just make this a DAO, because DAOs were becoming somewhat of a thing back then. And
did you guys look? Were you looking at other DAOs like for inspiration?
Hell no.
This is just.
I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry to all the ATX DAO audience out there.
You guys.
Had no plan to do any of this.
Buzzword DAO. You're like, yeah, let's DAO.
Literally, we said like DAO. How do we combine the term DAO, the term NFT? and we make money with them. And the idea was like, okay, let's make it. You have to hold an NFT to be a member, and you have to pay us, essentially, pay the treasury. Yeah. So the idea was very simple. It's like, everyone pitches in for this organization, and everyone is equal. No one's getting more, no one's getting anything else. It's like, we're all going to pull an entire amount of money.
Yeah.
No different than like, literally, like a Reddit group with a check, with a checking account.
Yeah.
And the first NFT was in that rooftop party that you're alluding to. There's actually an article about it written on that.
That's where I'm into.
Yeah. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. That's how you heard about ATXDAO. Okay.
Yeah.
So there was like an article that talked about the first.
That was actually the first time I had ever done anything with ATXDAO.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember how I found the party, to be honest. I keep trying to figure that out. I don't remember.
That's crazy.
But I found you guys. I went to the rooftop and I was like, oh, it's my people.
These are a bunch of weirdos.
They know what NFTs are. They're nice. Minting shit. I'm in.
Dude, it was back then, I think.
And then I went home and told my wife what I did. And she, you know, just shook her head.
Yeah. Yeah, like, shame on you. Shame on you. But, dude, back then, the NFT that we, I can't remember what the price was for the blue bonnet, but the price back then was 0.512 ETH.
0.512?
0.512. And that was a genius behind, I think Kyle is the one that came up with that. Like, that was a genius about it because back then ETH was like trading at 4,500, something like that.
Yeah.
So you're ponying up like $2,500 for that.
Yeah.
Which to this day has been the most expensive ATXDAO membership round to date. Okay. Yeah. Even the one that was 1 ETH.
That's why my wife snickered and went to bed.
Yes, that's right. So when people talk about, Mason and I, we joke about this all the time, where like people talk about like, oh man, this is so much money. I'm like, dude, I have paid the most and we've done the most work to get this organization going. So just give me the money and trust me and let's just build this thing together. So that's how it started. It really just started from like 25 guys that said like, hey, we're going to pull money together. Let's get this pool of money, form an NFTs, and we have governance. Looking back, if you look at DAOs like Friends with Benefits and other DAOs that are basically digital first, and they have access to millions of people, taking a small route, like 25 people, and then growing that to 50, and then growing that to 75, and then now we have, I think, 150 now?
Yeah.
Total members. That approach turned out to be the best thing that you can do. And I think this is not just ATXDAO, but every other DAO would agree with you that scaling slowly is the best way to do it because it is easier to organize 25 people than 1,000 people.
Oh, yeah.
So
not only is it easier, but I think that there is just the vibe, right? Yeah. Like when you scale too fast or when you're not careful about scaling, like it's really hard to hang on to a vibe. And I feel like we have done a great job of making sure that ATXDAO has the vibe that we want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ultimately, it feels like a social club, right? Like, we've always had this, like, as a primitive, where it's like, hey, yo, let's just gather around this one idea and just, like, hang out.
Yeah.
And, like, let's get someone to just, like, you know, take care of the money aspect of it while we hang out. Let's just trust each other and be transparent about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and now we have these technological primitives, which are basically
new. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is.
Right? Like, that's insane to think about it.
Well, and that, so, like, when it comes to the virality and the awareness that's happening with Web3 and crypto, like, one of my coworkers, his dad went to the World Series in Arizona. And his dad, who is also much older, sent him a text and was like, I think I got an NFT. And yeah, they were giving out these digital collectibles.
Yeah.
We don't call them NFTs, they're digital collectibles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But he had actually gotten an NFT
and
he actually used it for something, or I don't know what the whole hack was, but it's like now we have people from all walks of life starting to show us, like, look at this cool thing. Or I bought, my mom called me one day. She's like, so I bought some Bitcoin. I'm like, wow, awesome.
Congrats, mom.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah, this social aspect that's paired with this whole thing that you started over here, like the whole idea of like you said, like scale organically.
Yeah.
And it's like, bro, like the strength of the DAO is like this right here. Like
it is.
It's four fucking dudes, right, that are just chilling around eating pizza, drinking beers.
Yeah.
We're able to talk about shit. We came from like all these different places.
Yeah. Have
crazy different stories.
Right.
Where we're united around the same kind of like
the same vision.
Whole thing.
I agree.
And it's amazing. Yeah. Right? Like, and that's the coolest thing. Like, imagine like you get the same vibe with like 150 people that you never knew in the same city.
Yeah.
You know what would make it even cooler? If it were four
social grabs.
Four girls.
Ah, yes. Because,
that'd be great. That'd be great. But
yeah, but this is another opportunity to reset.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, dude, shout out to Megan because she is the one that brings the ladies into ATX now.
Like, yeah.
Megan has brought in, speaking of lore, we never, okay, like if you told me 2 years from now this is going to happen, I'd be like, no fucking way, you're crazy. Like, no chance. We're going to be sitting with four dudes that are members of the DAO talking about a podcast creator. I'd be like, nah, no fucking way. Which is fantastic. I mean, like, it's been an incredible process. We didn't, there was no planning, guys. Like, I have to say, this just kind of happened because the community loved the vision. They got behind the community. And you guys have done everything. Like, you can't, it's one of those things that we can't really take much credit from the, people talk about, like, founders or, like, the genesis is, like, no. Like, at some point, the entire community just took over and, like, made ATX out what it is right now.
I mean, it is, so this thing that we're talking about, like about the gender imbalance is like a real thing, right? Like, yeah. And I will also share.
I will say that it's a lot better than it used to be.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
So it is changing, but you know, and you're right, Roberto, like it is it's a second order effect of tech.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And like that needs to change at large too, but. I really do see this as an opportunity to reset because the bar for entering crypto is non-existent.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. Anybody who's willing to learn a little bit.
Yeah.
And hopefully we make that bar lower and lower and lower as an industry.
Yeah.
I'm a product of that. Look at me. Yeah. I mean, look at it.
Anyway, I digress. Hopefully, you know, this podcast is going to be listened to by people in the DAO.
Yeah,
outside
sure.
of the DAO.
Yep.
What do you want to see from the DAO say in the next, just in the next cycle, right? Because we're entering a period where things could get interesting again. We're going to get a lot more attention on crypto. It's an opportunity for DAO to have another moment in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
ATX DAO, DAOs in general. So what do you want to see ATX to do in the next 12 months?
I think that if we continue building across the three pillars that we set out, which are innovation, community, and policy, if we just keep working along those three lines with the North Star of turning Austin into crypto capital of the world, we're gonna do just fine. And the fact that we've pushed harder and the community has gotten closer and closer and stronger during the bear market is a very good sign that when the tide turns around and the bull comes back and then everyone and your grandma wants to join ATX DAO, it's gonna be epic. You know, it's going to be one of those things that I think that we have laid down a strong foundation in our community. We have laid down a very strong vision. And then we've laid out three different paths in the way that we can achieve that vision. So if we just keep doing that, I think we're going to be just fine.
Awesome. Well, thank you, founding member of the ATX DAO.
I appreciate it.
For hanging out with us.
Yeah. So we're going to make it to the moon.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Here we go.